So unlike Sudevi, I definitely don't have beautiful pictures. I'm not very good at finding pictures on the net, for sure. But also, Sudevi had the brunt of the big class. It was full philosophical class what she went through. And the rest of it, a lot of it is story that continues for Parikshit Maharaj on his reactions to the Brahmana and all. So it's just a prelude, to glorify Parikshit Maharaj. If I were to say, in one of the Srila Prabhupada's purport, he identifies it as a great man with a great lineage. And I always think of Prabhupada as Parikshit Maharaj as a great man with a great lineage, with a great administrative skills, a great warrior, a great king. On top of it, he had the greatest birth. And if there is the best of the best of the greatest birth, his death was even more greater than that. So everything about Parikshit Maharaj was very great. And so everything he did, nothing was just out of the blue. Everything was by God's will. And that was very important as we go further learning about Parikshit Maharaj. The invocation prayers. Narayanam namaskritya naram jaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayatam kuriye nashta prayesu bhadreshu nityam bhavat sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. So this is kind of a recap, not just of Sudevi's class verse, but just a little bit more back recap. Prabhupada mentions in his purport that austerity, cleanliness, mercy and truthfulness are the basic principles of religion, which prepare the ground for the reception of advancement in spiritual knowledge. And Parikshit Maharaj made this favorable condition possible within his regime. Parikshit Maharaj was a great king, and just by the way he cursed Kali was an example of his wonderful administration. He could have right away killed Kali, but he did not do that. He in fact punished Kali in such a way that Kali could also have its own place to live, and nothing, all the favorable spiritual conditions would still stay afoot. And that was an example of his amazing administration as a great king. A self-surrendered devotee of the Lord is called Narayan Prayana. Such a person is never afraid of any person or place, not even death. For him, nothing is as important as the Supreme Lord, and thus he gives equal importance to heaven and hell. And in all conditions and in all circumstances, remembrance of Narayan is essential. This is very important, is because the last line especially, in all conditions, all circumstances, a person does not forget the names of Lord Narayan. Those who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord do not run the risk of having misconceptions, even at the last moments of their lives. Srimad Bhagavatam is mainly full of narrations of activities of the Supreme Unlimited, and therefore it is the science of Bhakti Yoga or devotional science of the Lord. Sutta Goswami, as Sudevi had mentioned in her class about birth, Sutta Goswami did not take birth in a Brahmana family. He was born in a family of mixed caste or an uncultured low family. But because of higher association like Sukhdev Goswami and the great rishis of Naimisharanya, the disqualification of inferior birth was washed off. Krishna also is very strongly saying this in Bhagavad Gita as Chaturvarna Maya Shishtam, and the most emphasis on that whole verse is Guna Karma Vibhajana. And most of the times people forget very easily and get stuck on the birth qualification. I remember in one class where it was said that everybody by birth is a Shudra. There is no qualification that there is a they are Brahmana or Kshatriya or Vaishya or anything else. They are all born Shudra, and then as they go in their qualities, then they become whatever they are destined to become by their choices they make. It's also very important to remember that just because you are born, all the necessary things are provided to you. But for example, if you are born as in a Brahmana family, then the Brahmanas are already into devotional services. So the practice is there, but whether or not you follow that is truly up to your own choices, and that is what identifies you, in what provisions are given to you and whether or not you use those provisions wisely or not. If you do not use them wisely, then you fall down, and if you use them more wisely, then you can only rise up. Offenseless chanting of the holy name of the Lord is transcendental, and therefore such chanting can at once purify one from the effects of all kinds of previous sins. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna, can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of renounced order of life. By such non-violence and renunciation are consequential. Only the self-control can gradually be attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Self-control means not indulging in sense enjoyment more than necessary. The Supreme Absolute Truth is unlimited. No living being can know about the unlimited by his limited potency. The Lord is impersonal, personal, and localized. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So here's the next verse. I have combined the two verses, so
ekadharmudhyam ya vicharan mrigham yamvane mrigham anugadashnatakshuditasthishto vishram jalasyam achakshan pradivishetam tam asramam
Once upon a time, Parikshit Maharaj, while engaged in hunting in the forest with a bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. But by the desire of the Lord, even such a devotee can become apparently fatigued and thirsty just to create a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. The Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotees, even though he may engage in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, by others, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. It's very beautifully written by Prabhupada. If you look at what Bhagavatam says, it's a very small topic saying, you know, Parikshit Maharaj was tired and very hungry. But the way Prabhupada explains is very beautiful, explaining that he's a pure devotee, so he would not be so agitated by something so mundane. And he's also explaining that we have to give up our body relationships in order to attain Godhead. If we look at various stories in the scriptures, they will explain at the time of their death, they all went into deep meditation, forsaking eating, sleeping and doing all the bodily demands, activities, even and just living on very basic things. And so we have to be able to give that up. Parikshit Maharaj was in fact far, far above all that to start with. But oftentimes we are so embedded in our worldly responsibilities, so to say, that we don't know how to come out of it. And just as, you know, a fly is stuck in a spider's web, there is a way out, but the fly will never know what it is. And somebody else has to come and help disentangle the fly from the spider's web. In the similar way, God creates a beautiful situation for us, where he creates a situation where we have no option but to give up everything, whether it is a sickness or some kind of problem he creates for us. But because of that, we give up everything. In fact, oftentimes it is said that when we face problems in life, it is Krishna's love towards us, because he's taking away things from us to give more to us, bring him more closer to him. And so that is what the situation is created. It is a very awkward situation that he has created for Parikshit Maharaj, because he is feeling all this anger and frustration and he doesn't know what to do with it, and he acts under that mood of being anger and frustrated. Maharaj Parikshit was to become the medium of revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Krishna, as his grandfather Arjun was the medium of Bhagavad Gita. Had Arjun not been able to Had Arjuna not been taken up with an illusion of family affection by the will of Lord, the Bhagavad Gita would not have been spoken by the Lord himself for the good of all concerned. Similarly, had Maharaj Parikshin not been fatigued, hungry and thirsty at this time, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken by Srila Sukhdev Goswami, the prime authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very beautifully explained here that it's oftentimes we also say when Arjuna went into illusion, he had no need to do that. It was a specific situation created by the Lord. And Arjuna, so many questions, Arjuna already knew the answers to them. But he was asking it for the benefit of the people who would be able to get the message also. In the same way, in order for Srimad Bhagavatam to be recited, a situation had to be created. The age of Kali was approaching. And who better to do this than Maharaj Parikshit? If you remember very clearly, Krishna does not take glories upon himself. He create situations to glorify his own devotees in whatever way. When Bhagavad Gita was spoken, while Krishna was speaking the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was also glorified very beautifully after that. In the same way, Bhagavatam is completely about Lord Shri Krishna, but oftentimes we glorify Parikshit Maharaj and Sukhdev Goswami, Suta Goswami when we speak about Bhagavatam. And so his pure devotees are always glorified by the activities concerning the Lord. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind and intelligence were all restrained from material activities and he was situated in a trance apart from the three wakefulness, dream and unconscious. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. The transcendental position is attained by the three processes, namely the process of jnana or theoretical knowledge of transcendence, the process of yoga or the factual realization of transcendence by manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body, and the most approved process of bhakti yoga or the engagement of senses in the devotional service of the Lord. Our material mind and body develop from living entity, the soul, and being influenced by the three qualities of matter, we forget our real identity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the real reality of the soul, but the bhakti yoga factually engages the spiritual soul into the spirit soul into activities. Very beautifully explained by Srila Prabhupada about the various three processes. You can actually pinpoint very clearly that the jnana is just theory and the yoga is trying to factually do the realization, but it is only bhakti which engages complete senses, whether it's physiological, psychological, reality, theoretical, whatever you can call, it is only bhakti who can engage our senses into the right mode and take us back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada is explaining the gradual development of perception from the matter to a living entity. So it goes from perception of matter transcendence to subtler stage of senses, which then transcends to subtler mind, which then can transcend to breathing activities, and eventually if you are able to do that, then you are transcend to intelligence. And from that, the living soul is realized by the mechanical activities of yoga system or practice of meditation, restraining the senses, regulating the breathing system and applying intelligence. And this transcends to the transcendental position. And from there, they are able to stop all material activities of the body. So if you just go ahead and read this, the senses are transcendent to subtler mind and then breathing. He's explaining it very beautifully that how one by one we transcend from one step to another and finally we are able to transcend from all activities of the material body and thereby we are top and above. It's a process of a step. It's not, there is no magic in there. Just because we desire a magic, it doesn't happen. Everything has to go step by step. Even if you are chanting Hare Krishna very purifyingly, it is still a process to reach to Krishna. Just because we are chanting him doesn't mean we'll go to Krishna right away.
this, can we go back to the purport again? Of that, yeah, one more back. Not that one, in your slide. Sorry, translation. Qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute means what?
So, after having achieved a transcendental position, qualitatively equal, so quantitatively we are not equal. We remember that, correct?
Okay.
But qualitatively we become, Sachidananda Vigraha, we have become very blissful. We are completely at peace. So, with the qualities of Krishna, we become, even see, we have all the qualities of Krishna in a minute quantity, but some qualities are more stronger than the other, right? And because of that, you know, some person has little bit more of a beauty versus some person has little bit more of intelligence or strength.
I understand that. So basically in the soul's natural position, is that what it is? Not identifying with the body?
No, yes, it's a transcendental position which one achieves, and where they are completely immersed into the connection with the soul, is how I would speculate. If somebody else can enhance on it, that would be great also. But we become qualitative equal with the Supreme Absolute. That means we are fully connected with Him,
so
in that position.
Oneness and consciousness.
Oneness and consciousness.
Yeah.
So you say soul has to be active all the time. So if it is aligned with the soul's natural position, and the Muni is very in one place, not doing anything, it's little conflict in my mind about.
Well, the thing is, it's not like he's not doing anything, correct? Even you are sleeping, to people around you, you are not doing anything, but you may be dreaming, or you know, you are still sleeping, but we move your hands and legs, and you know,
so
you will go and see, you will say, I was not doing anything, I was sleeping, correct? But it's truly not that position you are in. You are already active. So in this state, the soul is extremely active. Your mind is extremely active, thinking of Krishna, right? The sense are all restrained from material activities. If you look at the first nine, the sense organs, breath, mind and intelligence are all restrained from material activities. That means they are extremely active in spiritual activities. They are not restrained from complete activities. They are not non-active. They are active, but they are very active spiritually, versus most of the times you are more active materially. In this instance, when we go in this kind of transcendent, which is not even possible for almost many of us, when we go in this kind of, we are completely active spiritually. And that is what it is that when you are so active spiritually, then your spirit soul is, you know, completely in connection with your Paramatma within you. And that is the whole thing, right? That you connect with Paramatma within you, and then you can realize the Supreme Aspect. Is that?
Can you go to the PDF, the purport? I think Prabhupada mentioned something in the initial.
It appears the moon in those trans.
Okay.
It appears. I can read much. PDF can just. Yeah, it appears that Muni, in whose hermitage the king entered, was in yogic trance. The transcendental position is attained by three processes, namely the process of jnana, theoretical knowledge of transcendence, the process of yoga, or factual realization of trance by manipulation of physiological and psychological functions of the body, and the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of the senses in the devotional service of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita also, we have the information of the gradual development of perception from matter to a living entity. Our material mind and body develop from the living entity, the soul, and being influenced by the three qualities of matter, we forget our real identity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the reality of the soul, but Bhakti Yoga factually engages the spirit soul in activities. The perception of the matter is transcended to still subtler states of the senses. The senses are transcended to the subtler mind, and then to breathing activities, and gradually to intelligence. Beyond the intelligence, the living soul is realized by the mechanical activities of the yoga system or practice of the meditation, restraining the senses, regulating the breathing system, and applying intelligence to rise to the transcendental position. This trance stops all material activities of the body. king
that's the key.
Yeah,
I
the
think.
King saw
the
muni
in that position.
In the position, he also saw the muni as follows.
So that one that I'm highlighting, that's the one that Prabhupada is, kind of narrowing upon. That all his material activities were completely stopped, but that doesn't mean he was stopped in everything. He spiritually, he was much more active than anything.
So of the three, that's yoga, bhakti, and jnana. So I'm a little confused here. So here. So it's the muni is in yogic trance where he's getting factual realization of trance by manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body, and therefore all material activities are stopped. Or how does it? How
the
is
second
it?
Process.
Because the last time
you
say the same thing.
He's
the
in the second, the yogic one, right?
Yes.
Not the
yes.
Bhakti yoga one.
Yeah, the yogic one.
Yogic.
So the bhakti yoga one is where the senses are
engaged.
Actually, like Prabhupada, in the translation it is mentioned, actually the consciousness at any given time can be in four states. Sleeping, wakeful, and then
dreaming.
And then samadhi.
Trance.
Sushupti, samadhi, and what is that? So, here actually, because he is when somebody does that yoga process, he comes to the samadhi state.
Yeah.
That's like Brahmabhuta state. In the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna tells. Brahmabhuta stage means that he is not disturbed by material activities.
Mm.
So he is beyond the conception of matter. So in that stage he is equal. When somebody comes to that level, he is equal to the Supreme in terms of quality. That's what I think.
Yeah.
So I had a DY student who is from this stream.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished the DY class, handed him to Vedanarayan Prabhu. So he'll be in your class. So you teach him how samadhi is not so good and bhakti yoga is good. Because his dad already performs from morning 4 to evening samadhi. So
his dad.
His dad does that. So they're well entrenched in what they do. No, they are not Gujarat. They're Maharashtra.
Get somebody else.
How is it different from Haridas Thakur?
Let's finish.
Let us discuss after this.
Sorry, Mother.
Now you wish you had highlighted that little one. Sure,
okay.
Vipra.
The sage in meditation was covered by the skin of a stag, and long compressed hair was scattered all over him. The king, whose palate was dry from thirst, asked him for water. The king had not received any formal welcome by means of being offered a seat, place, water, and sweet addresses. Considered himself neglected, and so thinking, he became angry. I just joined these two points because there was just so much in the purport I could do together. The great devotee and the king asked for water from the sage, absorbed in trance, was certainly providential. Otherwise, there was no chance of such a unique happening. Maharaj Parikshit was thus placed in an awkward position so that gradually Srimad Bhagavatam could be revealed. It's how many times it happens that a great king goes to the sages and there is nobody there. Nobody but the sage, not even little children playing around the hermitage. It just happens that he goes to the place where the sage is meditating and there is nobody to receive the king. The sage is in such a deep transcendental position that the sage is not aware of his surroundings. It's not something that happens. It's a very rare situation, and such rare situations that can be only created by Krishna himself. And something happened. It was something that was truly arranged by Krishna, though to a normal person it would seem that it just happened that way. But it was actually arranged by Lord Shri Krishna. And Parikshit Maharaj was in such an awkward position because of his whole frustration, anger, and everything, that Srimad Bhagavatam could be revealed. This is very beautiful. The law of reception in courts of Vedic principles states that even if an enemy is received at home, he must be received with all respects. That means even if you don't like some person who comes to your home, don't neglect them, don't make them sit in your living room and go and do your stuff. You have to still receive them very nicely. Even a poor man can receive a person as great as a king by offering him a small mat to sit, some water and a little bit of food. And that should be sufficient. A guest should not expect too much. But at the same time, the receiver should not neglect them continually. Atithi Deva Bhava is very, very prominent in our Indian culture, that we remember how to treat our guest. Oftentimes, though, we have guests whom we are not sure how to take them out of the house also, but that's a whole different thing. We won't go there. The example that Prabhupada gives in his purport is about Lord Krishna accompanying Arjuna and Bhima at the home of Jarasandha in Magadha. When you know, they wanted to kill Jarasandha and they challenged Jarasandha, they all went to Jarasandha's home, and Jarasandha was a staunch enemy of Krishna to start with. He definitely knew that Bhima had come to fight him, but he did not behave badly with them. He in fact welcomed them because they had come as guests. During the daytime they would fight, and at night they would nicely eat together and share their meals. And it's a very unique situation for us, you know, in the material world. If I grudge towards somebody, the grudge does not go away because it's night time and I'm supposed to behave nice. I'm in a fighting mode with my husband, it's not going away still, you know. It's stuck with me and I have to remember on how to behave that way. It's like, you know, you have to let go of your grudge. It's not easy. But these people, they were so much into the mode of treating people so nicely, they were able to let go of their grudge. And that explanation is given very beautifully by Prabhupada, explaining this whole Atithi Deva Bhava by how Jarasandha treats. Jarasandha actually was a demonic mentality. Despite of their demonic mentality, he was following this Vedic principle. When Maharaj Parikshit entered the door of Shamika Rishi, he did not expect royal reception. He knew that Shamika Rishi was a sage with very little means with himself. As a matter of fact, before I go there, all he really expected was a small straw mat, a little bit of food, maybe some sweets and a glass of water. That was all it was expected. But he felt Shamika Rishi was ignoring him. And Prabhupada explains further, he says, as a matter of fact, the king was right to get angry with the Rishi when he needed a glass of water very badly. To become angry at such a grave situation is not unnatural for a king, because kings are usually very strong headed, they are Kshatriyas to the highest. You know, Kshatriyas are known to be very honor bound and they expect to be respected wherever they go. And so the king, when they do not get the needed honor, they lose their patience. But because the king himself was not less than a great saint, his becoming angry and taking action was astonishing. Because so in this instance, it's saying for a normal king to become angry, sure, it's very acceptable because that would happen. And you know, they are known to be, you know, not getting the honor but demanding the honor. They may deserve or not deserve the honor and respect, they usually are known to demand it. But in case of Parikshit Maharaj, he himself was an extremely saintly person. And so to become angry and take action at something like this was astonishing. I mean, if you think about us in a situation like this, I would think that we would not even do something like this. We would think, oh, this person is a Rishi, he is in trance, let's step back. But and so for Parikshit Maharaj to do something was inconceivable, that he would do something like this. He was such an advanced devotee, the way he dealt with Kali and you know, how great and mercifully he dealt with Kali. He himself was extremely merciful. And so this happening was completely, should be accepted as it was ordained so by the supreme will of the Lord. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king, meaning he was also a very great devotee. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created that they became ways, with the king's becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, and thus becoming a completely surrendered soul onto the lotus feet of the Lord. This was a very beautiful punchline. I liked it very much. The merciful Lord sometimes creates an awkward positions for his pure devotees in order to drag them towards himself from the mere of material existence. But outwardly, the situations appear to be frustrating to the devotees. Very important line. The devotee of the Lord are always under Lord, the protection of the Lord. And in any condition, frustrating or success, the Lord is the supreme guide for the devotee. The pure devotees therefore accept all conditions of frustrations as blessings from the Lord. The prayers of Kunti Maharani enhance that she faced so many problems in life, and despite the fact she didn't want Krishna to go away. She's like, Krishna, don't go away, stay with us. O Brahmanas, the king's anger and envy directed towards the Brahmana sage were unprecedented, being that circumstances had made him hungry and
thirsty.
While leaving, the king, being so insulted, picked up a lifeless snake with his bow and angrily placed it on the shoulder of the sage. Then he returned to his palace. For a king like Maharaj Parikshit to become angry and envious, especially at the sage and Brahmana, was undoubtedly unprecedented. The king knew well that the Brahmana, sages, children, women and old men are always beyond jurisdiction of punishment. Prabhupada keeps repeating this over and over again in his purports, explaining that the situation was truly not of the norm. It was not something that would have happened in any normal circumstances. It was a very unique situation created by the Lord. The king was right to punish his subject for coldly receiving him or neglecting him. But because the culprit was a sage and a Brahmana, same thing. It was unprecedented. As the Lord is never envious of everyone, so also the Lord's devotee is never envious of everyone. The only justification for Parikshit Maharaj's behavior is that it was ordained by the Lord. This is also very beautifully told by Prabhupada. It's saying that the Lord is not envious. The quality that Sudevi was explaining in her PowerPoint about non-violence, one of the things that goes away is envy. And so the Lord's devotee is also without any envy. And so they are also not envious. So when the sage was in the transcendental state, Lord Parikshit Maharaj should not have become angry, because anger comes from envy, saying, why am I not received, and all those things, and lustful behavior. Lustful behavior meaning wanting something which is not yours, and wanting it too badly. And so, you know, Parikshit Maharaj wanted to be received by the sage so badly that he took it to heart even more badly. And so this whole thing had no justification in its own. And so the only justification was it was ordained by the Lord. The king thus treated the sage tit for tat, although he was never accustomed to such silly actions. By the will of the Lord, the king, while going away, found a dead snake in front of him. And he thought that the sage, who had coldly received him, thus might coldly be rewarded by offer a garland of dead snake. Look how the whole situation is. For Parikshit Maharaj to be so thirsty and hungry, and on top of it to become frustrated because of thirst and hunger. The sage, being in a trance at the time, in such a deep trance, he is not aware of anything around him. There is nobody in his hermitage. Everybody is wherever they are playing. There is nothing going on around him. The king is becoming so angry that he is going for a tit for tat situation, something as advanced as Parikshit Maharaj. And of all things, there is just a dead snake lying on the road, saying, yeah, here is a snake for you, do what you want with it. And he gets this bright idea, I'm going to pick this snake up and put it around the sage's neck. I mean, it's just unimaginable, the whole thing, the whole situation, the whole story just does not, again, you know, there is no justification, rhyme or reason for this. And that itself tells us that how well this whole thing was organized by the Lord himself, so that it can go much further than just the king being frustrated, and it would create glorification for Parikshit Maharaj, Sukhdev Goswami, Sutta Goswami, the sages of Naimisharanya, and of course all of us at the same time. Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had actually been in meditation with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya, because Brahmana is higher than a kshatriya. So, you know, the sage was being prideful. The king, being a devotee of the Lord, did not approve his own action. And thus he began to wonder whether the sage was really in trance, or was he just pretending in order to avoid receiving the king, who is a kshatriya and therefore lower in rank. Prabhupada is very nicely saying this. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong. Parikshit Maharaj was a good soul within himself, so he kind of rethought his action. Should I really do this? Should I really did this? Did I do that? Should I have done that? That usually comes to people who are actually good by nature. Otherwise, you know, people who are prideful, they always think, whatever I do is perfect. I have no cause to grieve or lament. I did everything which was right. So even if Parikshit Maharaj was thinking, not completely thinking he was wrong, he was still kind of speculating, he was still thinking about it. And Prabhupada explains that that only comes because he was a good soul. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami do not believe the king's action was due to his past misdeeds. Oftentimes, you know, we say it's karma, what goes around comes around. But, you know, this was not because of that. It is very nicely said by Prabhupada in there. It was because the Lord had a bigger reason to do some things. Oftentimes, you know, we do small actions which don't seem favorable at a certain time, like, you know, correcting a child in a very harsh way because of some wrongdoings they do. But in the long term, it helps them much better. And so, in the same way, you know, in this instance, whatever Parikshit Maharaj did, his past deeds did not make any sense of him doing something like this of his previous life. If his previous life was so bad, he would have never seen Krishna at the time before even he was born. And then to have Krishna as his uncle, you know, it was even much rare. And on top of it, you know, his whole life was dedicated, his lineage was dedicated to devotees of Krishna. In one of the chapters, it was explained that his lineage was so powerful that it was very hard for Parikshit Maharaj to fall down, because if he only upkept the lineage that he had, which was kept up by his own ancestors, he was already going to be liberated because it was so high. And so Parikshit Maharaj had no misdeeds in his past. This whole thing was so beautifully orchestrated by the Lord himself, and that is the reason it happened. The arrangement was made so by the Lord just to call the king back home, back to Godhead. It was time for Parikshit Maharaj to go home, back to Godhead. But the Lord just did not want to take him back home, back to Godhead. He wanted to recite Srimad Bhagavatam to prepare people for the age of Kali, and he had already selected Parikshit Maharaj to be that. And so this whole thing happened. Srila Vishwanathi Chakravarti Thakur, the plan was made by the will of the Lord, and by the will of the Lord, the situation of frustration was created. The plan was that for his so-called misdeed, the king could be cursed by an inexperienced Brahmana boy, infected by the influence of Kali, and thus the king would leave the hearth and home for good. His connections with Srila Sukhdev Goswami would enable the presentation of the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the book incarnation of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada further explains what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said, that it was the full plan of the Lord, and the plan was his so-called misdeed. So even what this happened, Prabhupada doesn't even call that a misdeed. In a normal situation, if one of us would do it, we would be cursed for who knows how many lifetimes. But in this instance, Prabhupada not even says it was, he doesn't say it was not a misdeed. He even says it's a so-called misdeed. People may think it of a misdeed, but it was completely by the will of the Lord. Like Arjuna killing millions and millions of people in the battle of Kurukshetra. To a normal person, he would be a murderer. But in true sense, he was not a murderer. Or Lord Rama killing Vali in the battle with Sugriva from the sidelines. And Vali said, this is not the right code. And Lord Rama said, no, what you did is wrong. So if the Lord does something, definitely we should not copy it because we are not qualified to do it. But at the same time, whatever the Lord does is fully justified and we should not question it. And in this instance, whatever was happening to Maharaj Parikshit by the will of the Lord, and so it should not even be questioned or talked as misdeed, because Prabhupada has very clearly said that this was ordained by the Lord. The Lord wanted it to happen this way and that's why it's happening. And then he also said that the only way sometimes to cut ties is to put oneself in extreme positions. Oftentimes, you know, our prayers are very powerful when we are in trouble, when there is something bad going on, something that we didn't want is going on. And then if you go sit with your chanting, you will see how intense your chanting is, because you are really asking for protection from the Lord. But if you are just chanting on a regular basis, the chanting is good, but it is not that good versus when you are in trouble. And that's why Kunti Devi is also saying the same thing, because we really seek the protection of the Lord. In this instance, Parikshit Maharaj was given only 7 days to live, and so he had to do something fast and something drastic in order to, and the only way to do that was cut all his ties and find a way back home, back to Godhead. This specific pastime of the Lord has a special significance, because anyone who properly learns about this particular pastime of the Lord will certainly be dissuaded from mundane sex desires and be placed on the sublime devotional service of the Lord. A pure devotee's mundane frustration is meant to elevate the devotee to higher transcendental position. Just what I was saying a couple of minutes, seconds ago, that when we have small frustrations in our life, as far as, you know, so we are cooking prasadam and not sure of the taste, I oftentimes say, my Krishna, there are many people coming today, I have not tasted it, please make sure it's okay. You know, it's as simple as that, but that prayer is very nicely done sometimes, because we don't know who else to approach at the time. And so when we, even if out of mundane frustrations we do the prayer nicely, it helps us, because we are calling Krishna's name in a very true state of mind, just like Ajamil did. Ajamil was scared of dying, nothing else. He was just calling his son Narayan, but he was calling it with such purity that he achieved a much higher position. By placing Arjuna and Pandavas in frustration due to the intrigue of their cousin brothers, the battle of Kurukshetra was created by the Lord. This was to incarnate the sound representation of the Lord, Bhagavad Gita. So we first created frustration for Arjuna and Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So by placing Parikshit Maharaj in an awkward position, the incarnation of Srimad Bhagavatam, the book representative of the Lord, was created by the will of the Lord. So first created sound representative, then we have the book representative as Srimad Bhagavatam. Being distressed by hunger and thirst was only a show. Because the king had endured much, even in the womb of his mother, he was never disturbed by the glaring heat of Brahma Astra, revealed by Ashwatthama. So Prabhupada is explaining further that the king was not a disturbed soul, he was a complete dhira. Even when the whole heat of Brahma Astra came towards him within the womb, he was not even disturbed by it, and he felt complete protection from Lord Shri Krishna. So how would he be affected just by a little hunger and thirst of, you know, few hours? The king's distressed condition was certainly unprecedented. The devotees like Maharaj Parikshit are powerful enough to forbear such distresses by the will of the Lord, and they are never distressed. The situation in this case was therefore all planned by the Lord. If you look at the purport that Prabhupada has written, he is repeatedly saying it was ordained by the Lord, it was planned by the Lord. And every purport, I think he has said this at least more than once. So this was it, the session summary. Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry and thirsty, because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. One has to give up all attachments of the worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause indifference. The Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee, even though he may be engaged in worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation and the devotee is obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it as an unfavorable to be unfavorable and frustrating. This is very nice, because when we are in trouble, we have to remember that it is the mercy of the Lord, and not think of it as it is very bad for us and Krishna is not looking out for me and Krishna is this or Krishna is that. I'm such a great devotee of Krishna and look what Krishna is doing to me. That is, and we should not think of those things. Rather, we should say it's a signal by the Lord to try and give up some of the attachments we have. And if we don't give up, then Krishna will create even more unfavorable situations for us. Because we are trying to walk on this path, unfortunately or fortunately for us, we are in the radar of Krishna. And when we are in the radar of Krishna, he is not going to let us go. He is constantly watching us. And so, rather than anything, we should be more scared. If somebody was watching every action you were doing, then that would be a big problem. Because, you know, we do a lot of bad things, even if it is within our heart. And in this instance, the Lord is always watching us. And when he sees us going in the wrong path, it gives the first tiny signal. Not working gives a more stronger signal. And third time, he will just slap us hard. And either we you know, clean our act, or, you know, there will be more things coming towards us, because he will not let us go. But people who are not devotees will not take that as anything, but they will think of it as Lord being unfavorable and frustrating. Our biggest thing is, when Krishna gives us the signal, we should not give up his worship. If we have frustrations, we take out our frustrations with Krishna. Eventually we will learn that those are not frustrations, those are blessings. But rather than, you know, when something unfavorable happens, I see people, you know, I did all these devotional things, nothing's helping me. I would rather do my day-to-day stuff and it will be much easier for me, and they give up their devotional life. We have seen that so many times. People come so powerful in Krishna consciousness, and then extremely powerfully they go out also. In one blink and they are there, and the next blink you don't even know where they are. That is because they forget to take the shelter of Krishna. They forget that, you know, whatever they are doing is only because of Krishna's desire. Maharaj Parikshit was to become the medium for the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Shri Krishna, as his grandfather Arjuna was the medium for Bhagavad Gita. As a matter of fact, the king was right to get angry with the Rishi, as he needed a glass of water very badly. But to become angry in such a grave situation was not unnatural by the king, but the king himself was not less than a great saint. So he became angry. His anger and taking action were astonishing. Our material mind and body develop from living entity, the soul being influenced by three qualities of matter. We forget our real identity. Jnana Yoga process is theoretical, which speculates about reality. But Bhakti Yoga is factually, which engages the spirit soul in activities. The Lord is never envious of anyone, and also the Lord's devotee are never envious of anyone. It is only frustration. It's the only justification for Maharaj Parikshit behavior is that it was ordained by the Lord. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as he commits something wrong. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami do not believe the king's action was due to his past misdeeds. And lastly, the arrangement was made so by the Lord just to call the king back home, back to Godhead. We read this earlier, but the final punchline I would give this for all of us to remember is, the devotee of the Lord are always under protection of the Lord, and in any condition, frustration or success, the Lord is a supreme guide for us, and we should never ever forget who is our actual guide, who is our actual well-wisher, the one and only one Lord Shri Krishna. And if we keep just remembrance of that, I think we will be very much in a better position than most of us. Was it?
Do we do the verses first or questions first?
We'll do questions first.
Questions first?
Where do I go back?
Verses. I thought they do verses first, then everybody can do. I thought that's what we do. No?
No, questions, and then at the end.
Okay, what? Well.
Previous slide.
Previous.
Before summary. The summary slide. Session summary.
Verses already done.
Yes.
She did it.
This one?
Oh, she did it?
You missed her.
Next slide.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah. To become angry in such a grave situation, the first one, to become angry in such a grave situation was not unnatural for the king. But because the king himself was not less than a great saint, he became angry and taking action. His becoming angry and taking actions were astonishing.
So, this is actually, this is exactly how it's written by Prabhupada.
So, what's your question?
And not unnatural?
That's what I think. It was contradicting this.
In general, for a king, he can become angry because of his position.
That is unnatural. That I understood.
That is natural. But because Parikshit Maharaj is as good as saint, he's a saint like the Muni.
Okay.
A saintly person.
Yeah.
But
not
taking action
like what he did,
which is astonishing.
Yes.
The situation itself was very grave. Prabhupada explains further in there. The situation itself was very bad. That the king was entering the hermitage. Usually, you know, there is lot of pomp and recognition about them. So, even in a normal situation, even if it was Parikshit Maharaj and it was treated this way by somebody else, he could get angry that, you know, the proper code of Vaishnava etiquette is not followed. But in this situation, the king was saint.
Yes.
The person who was so-called doing the wrongdoing was a sage. He was in trance. And then on top of it, the king to take action and get angry on such a thing was just not natural. That's the whole thing.
If king was not a sage, then...
Yeah.
But even, I think also, another thing I can think of it is that Prabhupada is saying that to take a grave action, to take action in such a grave mistake was okay for the king. If it was by somebody else. For somebody else in some other situation. But this whole situation was such that there was no need for it. That is, I think that's what it is. What was your other?
Yeah, I got the answer. Yeah.
Then?
No. Other two questions I have. Mm-hmm. So, you said that everybody by birth is a Shudra. So, is it for only Kali Yuga or in any Yugas?
I'm not and sure
so,
for any
other. How do you explain the birth of Parikshit Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj?
Only Kali Yuga. But even if I were to think in my own limited knowledge, correct? By birth, Prahlad Maharaj was born in a demonic family. By birth, he was lower than a much. He was low. He was a Kshatriya, but a demonic family Kshatriya, correct? If you think about it.
But he is not a Shudra, right? Kshatriya and Shudra
are... No, they are not. But at the same time...
No, she is telling that it is not just by birth that you get your...
Prahlad Maharaj got his association, his qualification in the womb of his mother. And by womb of his mother and association, he was purified. Correct? And thereby his qualification increased much, much, much more. By birth, he might be a Kshatriya. But by his qualification, his attitude and everything, he was higher than a Brahmana. He was a Vaishnava.
He was like Kshatriya with an asterisk.
So,
my understanding is that one becomes a particular, like a Vaishya, Brahmana, Shudra, by the purificatory ceremony being conducted. Otherwise, by default, everybody is a Shudra. And then when the purificatory ceremonies are conducted, then somebody comes to that level.
The reason we
so
say
in the previous ages, the purification ceremonies are always done. It's not that somebody will not do. Somebody will not have a child without going through Garbhadhan Samskara.
But
so
even
in Kali Yuga, that doesn't happen. So everybody is... then nobody gets elevated from that level.
And also, I think in the previous verse, I read in Prabhupada, the same modes, people were in a certain mode.
Yeah.
Like for Vaishyas, maybe there was a certain combination of the modes. The children were also born in that same mode. Now it is not like that. The Vaishyas are not of the mode of Vaishyas. There are some combination here. The children are born something else. So it's not like the thing is cleanly continued. And also in Bhagavatam, there are many stories where the king's son had Brahminical tendencies, or the Brahmin's son had Kshatriya tendencies. And the marriages were also Anuloma, Pratiloma. Husband is of a higher. The wife, and then the combination child was something different.
Like all Daksha's daughter were Kshatriya born, right? But they were all born, married to all these high sages, and they were able to give up their Kshatriya comforts and tendencies, so to say, correct? Because they were trained that way.
But in that case, it was like they say that it's okay if the woman is from another
But the other way is usually not allowed.
The other way also, where a Brahmin's daughter was marrying a Kshatriya.
I think in Kali Yuga we only maintain pure breeds of animals.
The context in which the statement is made that by birth everybody is a Shudra
is mainly for Kali Yuga.
Understand from the context. That context is that by purification ceremony one
yes.
gets qualified.
Yes.
That is the context in which that statement was made. So you have to understand from that perspective.
But even it's not just a ceremony, right, Prabhu? After the ceremony,
yeah.
the child can be born out of different tendencies, correct?
No, by purificatory ceremony in the previous yugas, and it's done properly, that will be this type of soul will be attracted. The soul which takes birth.
Oh, you're saying
the
Garbhadhan sanskar.
So that's the idea behind it. If somebody is not done the purification, then he is a Shudra.
Yeah. And again, you know, in Kali Yuga, Prabhu, there is no way to do a proper purificatory ceremony
anyway.
Nobody knows how to do it.
No. In Kali Yuga, all the things are off. All bets are off because it's Nanda Sumanda. Everybody is like.
Yeah. And so, where do you start? Then, in anything you start, you started with kindergarten. In the whole Varnashram system, the Shudra is the lowest of everything, and you cannot go lower than that.
So
you can just rise higher from there, or you can stay there, pretty much, right? And so that's how, you know, I would explain the statement. It's saying that you start from there, and you can definitely go higher, anywhere you want. But I mean, you know, logically you can go lower and become a Chandala, but that's a whole different topic. I won't go there.
So my take is, since there is no Garbhadhana samskaras in Kali Yuga, we'll take it for granted that all of them are Shudras.
Mm.
But since Garbhadhana samskara is done in other yugas appropriately, so we cannot consider them saying that they are Shudras at the time of birth, because the Garbhadhana samskara is already done.
Yeah, so
the
proper varnas,
they were proper varnas.
Proper varnas was maintained.
But again, they were not born Shudras, but they can always change what they were. Like
yeah,
Brahmana's
yeah,
son
yeah.
can become
whatever.
A Kshatriya
yeah.
and everything.
Based on
yeah.
the gunas.
Gunas and everything. Yeah. Yeah.
My other question was,
I think that was before you finish. I think I don't know the words, but I think Prabhupada quotes all the time. By birth, by mother's birth, one is Shudra. Only by the process of training, one becomes, you know, Dvija or whatever. The Dvija means, twice born. The twice born may be Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya.
Okay.
So by birth, everybody is Shudra.
Yeah.
Only by the proper process of training, one becomes Dvija.
Yeah.
And there is a Sanskrit quote. I don't remember that, but Prabhupada often quotes a good point.
For me, you know, I have not understood it was only for Kali Yuga, so I will not go further.
I'm not sure whether it's for Kali Yuga.
I think it would much spread, I would say.
I don't say it would Kali Yuga only. This is actually a Sanskrit statement.
Maybe we should find
yeah.
some.
Yeah.
Then we cannot say that, okay, by birth, Parikshit
Maharaj.
But
if you find, you can choose Shudra because
no, Parikshit Maharaj, see, that is a statement. You know, for all the living entities, you cannot just take Parikshit Maharaj, and Parikshit Maharaj is a great devotee.
By birth, Krishna was born
yeah.
in Kshatriya, and then he was trained as a Vaishya, but he is the personality of Godhead, correct?
The thing is, whenever we want to use the statement, in the context we have to use, right? We have to explain the context. We cannot say, okay,
yeah.
everybody by birth is a Shudra, how...
It is taken, I don't use that statement in a normal class. It is because it is this class, I use that statement. I'm very careful with this statement because I know that Prabhupada used this statement. But you know, I get very careful because it's a very offensive. People are very proud of their birth and they feel like how dare, even if they are as low as a Vaishya, they're like, how can you call me a Shudra? But you know, I think that it is appropriate, and as Prabhupada saying is a purificatory process, I always understood it was the training that made you rise higher in one of the rungs. But I don't know if it's only meant for Kali Yuga. But it's I still have my doubts, but I don't know how to justify my doubts. Because if it was just the purificatory process and not the training,
it has to be both.
You say purificatory ceremony, it means it includes training.
No, it's not that. What is not just Garbhadhan samskara.
It's not just Garbhadhan.
Yeah, it's not just.
I didn't say just Garbhadhan samskara.
Yeah.
The purificatory ceremony of the whole thing, samskaras.
All the samskaras. All the samskaras.
From after the birth. Although
yeah.
there is like
yeah.
one type of
samskar. So, but at the time of birth, then only the Garbhadhar samskar is done when the child is born. So, you cannot determine their varna at the time. You cannot determine the varna at the time of a child when it is born, because yes, you did the garbhadham sanskar, you pray for the better and the best soul you get, but then whether or not the child's tendency is to follow the right training that they are given, right? Like what was it, last week's verse of Bhagavatam, we had the King Vena, right? He was bound to such a pious king, but he was such a demonic person the way he was born, correct? It was not that his training was lacking, and not that any of the samskaras would have been missed by the king himself, but it is just the how the whole thing played out and how the soul decided how he wanted to go, correct? So
yeah,
no more from you, Prabhu. No more questions.
It's not for just for me.
I know.
Mathi, I just wanted to share something. Like I think all of us would have also heard, but I just thought it would be nice to add here that like here we are seeing that Parikshit Maharaj is thirsty and hungry and he gets angry. But when he is hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 continuous days and nights, he is thirsty, he is hungry, I mean everything is happening, sleeping, not sleeping also. But he is not feeling only any of those things. He is not feeling that thirst, hunger and sleep. So it shows that he is an advanced devotee.
He is an
advanced devotee. Yes.
He actually says that, right?
Yeah, and he says that also.
So why?
He says that.
So what, is there any kind of shastric explanation of why they were going after these stags and killing them? Was it for their skin, or I mean, what was the fun part of, like, is that a sport or?
I heard one
skills.
Point about that in one lecture. Huh?
Keeps,
yes. But I heard one other point, which was an interesting point for me. I probably heard only a few months back, that there were sages in the
forest.
And they would like to keep the population of the wild animals to
under control,
so that the sages are not too much disturbed. That was an interesting point.
That was one, and
then
I heard that maybe Rambal Maharaj said that. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Where
so
I heard.
That's a good point, because they were not killing it for protein or whatever. I mean, they were killing it for.
Yeah.
Other reasons.
Yeah.
Because you could have, DIS, you could get a question like that.
Yeah, sure.
No, and then people say that they were killing, so they must be eating.
The primary reason the Kshatriya goes for hunting is to keep his skills.
Yeah. That was the other
thing.
And
then also, corollary is like, it takes care of the population of the forest.
And then I have heard this also. That if the sages were pure, why were they sitting on the skin of animals, you know? And the reason I had heard was to keep away the snakes and other things, because when those they are sitting on the animal skin, the bugs, the snake, they keep away from that.
Prabhupada says that.
So that is justification of why they were sitting.
Krishna says that.
Krishna
says in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says that it keeps away the insects and
only deer skin and tiger skin.
Only deer skin and tiger skin.
I had heard that
sometimes. Yeah.
One question, not for you, but all the class. You said that the Bhagavad Gita is like a sound incarnation in the Bhagavad Gita.
Book incarnation.
I knew you were going to ask that question.
I
don't know.
I got
that. You will ask it.
I got that from, from where was it? It was from the purports itself.
Yeah.
So I'm not making it up.
No, that's a very good.
I looked at that also.
I
knew he asked that question.
Sound is because I'm speculating because the Lord Himself spoke and the book because it has been written by.
Both
are
literary,
sound,
right? Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami.
But it is written
it
for us.
One
is written by
Vyasadeva
for us.
But
Vyasadeva
also written for us.
True, but see, Krishna spoke. Krishna Himself spoke the Gita for us. So it's His sound which. Went through and came to us versus Vyasadeva was given that vision.
It's
just speculation, right? No, the reason I say is because it's sound incarnation is because Krishna Himself spoke the Gita directly to Arjuna and for the rest of us. Though Vyasadeva wrote it, he did not write what he desired, he wrote what Krishna spoke. Correct? Versus in Bhagavatam.
It's Krishna sound.
It's Krishna sound.
That is why Bhagavad Gita has a special status, right?
Yeah.
It's considered as both Shruti and Smriti.
No, but then Prabhu is telling even Bhagavad Gita was then written.
It was.
Yeah, but it's written.
But it came from the sound of Krishna.
No, I'm just telling what he said. Prabhu, for you, everything is like Venn diagram.
When you go out and say this, right? You will ask this question, right?
No, yeah, so don't say such thing.
But it is very. Prabhu, if you think it's explained in this way.
I got that answer.
Sometimes we get the question that if Krishna spoke to Arjuna, then who documented it? That's a possible question. Bhagavad Gita, who documented it? How do you know it's the exact manuscript?
Because Sanjaya was watching the battle of Kurukshetra. So Sanjaya heard the Bhagavad Gita along with Arjuna, but Vedavyas was also watching it.
No, but then they say, how do you know that the same one is carrying? They have such questions.
But that goes back to how do you know anything?
Yeah. Somewhere you have to put your
finger. Can you give us a session?
Discover
yourself.
Om Namo.
Jnana-grasya-yato-maya-vitrasya-vasesho-vijnasa-va-te-ne-brahma-vidara-adhika-ve-muhyanti-yat-shuraya